Billy McCarty, Senior, blah blah. June 25th.
Yeah, 10 up. Webster was marshaled in. I just went to a bootlegger and I got two bottles of whiskey, and he had dropped it in newspaper, 2 quarts. And just as I got out of his house, here comes Webster. I seen him, it was getting dusk. And there's a picket fence right there where I got on the street. He kept coming closer, and I was trying to break those bottles over that fence. Doggone if I can break them bottles. They're wrapped up in newspaper. Finally, I took them and banged them right together, and glass was all over my feet, and he come up right to me with a gun in his hand. He said, "Stop that or I'll shoot." And I said, "Shoot and be damned." I wasn't afraid of nobody those days. Gun or not, no, nothing. Webster said, "That's whiskey you had there." I said, "I don't know what's in it. Just pick up some glass. This was whiskey you had, isn't it?" I said, "I don't know, Mr. Webster. I don't know what's in those bottles. Anyway, the evidence is gone. Yeah, I see that. All this time, this bootlegger that I bought the whiskey, he had his door partly open. He listened to us across the street. He says, 'By golly, you're some brave man.' When the marshal said he'll stop it or I'll shoot, and you should shoot and be damned, and I kept breaking the bottles." He gave me two more bottles that night. Billy Carney was his name. He was an Irishman. Once he nabbed me on the front street. I was going down to the post, get some soldering acid, and I just got a bottle from someone at this NC store. And I lost the cork, and I stopped it in at Vachon's, talking with him a while. Said, "I lost the cork." I told him, I said, "You got any caps?" And he gave me a cap to put over this bottle, and I was going down with a light jacket, a sweater. And I had it inside of my shirt, and I seen him standing out there with another fellow named Miller. He died at 10 up, late, around 25 or 26, and he nabbed me right as I was going to go by them. He said, "You got something inside your shirt there?" I said, "Yes." And he started pulling out the wood. "Let me help you." And I turned the bottle. I found out I had a cap on it. You could pull it off easy. And I turned the bottle clean around inside my shirt, and I fumbled about getting it out. And the street, there was a stone pavement in front of the jail, and it was the pavement was it all spilled out on that pavement. And this was whiskey I had in the bottle. I said, I don't know. I pick up the bottle because I was going down to the post to get some southern acid. He threw the bottle away and I went and picked it up again. I said, I need this bottle. He couldn't arrest me that time because I ruined the evidence. Just a bottle, that's all. But I was all wet. My pants was all wet and the pavement was, there was liquor on the pavement, stone pavement. I said, oh, when you first got me, I got so scared that I peed in my pants, I told him. However, he got that, when I got it out, it was empty. It was another occasion where I was delivering some whiskey, White Mule. Making it that time. In 2022 or 2023, that was. I collected the money and I carried it up to Front Street. And the boys all waited up there around the NC. That gave me the money. And Marshall was Webster, the same fella. He was right behind, he was a distance away, but he was following me up. When I come out of the, he saw me coming out of the restaurant with a gunny sack. Yeah, I walk pretty fast to up to the NC, and I said, you boys, get your bottle and take off right away, and he can find the sack only. So each native come up, snatched the bottle, and they went up toward the mission, and he couldn't go after them. And he pick up the gunny sack, and he look at, well, you must have had whiskey in this sack. I said, I don't know, and all you find is a sack. Well, he couldn't arrest me that time either. And the evidence were all gone. Each native was on his way to the mission, and he couldn't catch him. He said, I'll get you someday. He never did get me, though. I was a fearless man. I wasn't afraid of any big or small men. I was just 15 years old when I first started work at the post. My girl, the first week, some big soldiers, I handled them just like babies. I was so tough. I'd been working before that all my life, and I was pretty skookum. They got to be my best friends after that.
You had some kind of showdown with them?
Yeah.
What was that?
At Tenno.
Yeah,
Fort Gibbon.
What happened up there? What kind of showdown was that?
I wrestled with them or I punched them up. I was known that among the soldiers as One Punch Bill, One Punch McCarty. I never let a man get to beat me to anything. I fought in close. He's a big man. I fought close and I put him out right away. Finally, the soldiers they seen how tough I was. They got to be my friend.
Well, when you came down here to Ruby after that, you said that you got to be friends with pretty much everybody over here in Ruby, too.
Yes.
And you said that those guys in, you had quite a bit of pull because all those guys in power kind of liked you.
Yeah.
Well, why was it that they liked you more than they liked other people?
Because I was, oh, I don't know why. Because I was willing to do to work for them or anything. I never hesitated with anybody that needed help or job. I was ready to work at the instant they asked me. I think that's one reason why I was well liked.
What kind of jobs did they have you doing?
Oh, like mining or shoveling snow around town or shovel the roofs off. I helped more than one fellow on woodwork, haul, get a pail of water or something. I never said I was too busy. And I was well liked by everybody around here. I'm still liked yet. At Tannenau the same, and everywhere I went, down Nulato, Kaikuk, Galena, Caltag. When I was young, I seen an old woman sawing wood. Doggone, I went and took the saw away from her and I said, let me saw your wood. And I walked away after I got the wood sawed. I walked away. They said thank you and all that to me. I just took everything in my stride. That's what made me likable all over Alaska. I was getting $5 a day at Fort Gibbon, doing nothing. I work whenever I please. If it was too cold or if it was snowing, I wouldn't work. And I had my meals at the post and even clothes. And a lot of poor natives up from the mission or Cross Target or Old Station, they come there and I give them a treat in the restaurant. That time the meals were cheap, dollar meal. I played havoc with the postwoman though. They asked me, do you dance at the Moose Hall? Oh yes, whenever they dance, you always see me on the floor. And they had one wild place called the Greasy Spoon Dance Hall. I said, I go there too, and there we have lots of fun every Saturday night. We have fights. And we'd have a dance down at the post on Saturday night. And the officers and their wives would dance. They'd ask me all these questions, and I think you better not dance with me anymore. You go to the native dancers and get rough with, go to rough dance hall. Sunday nights they have they all eat up in one of the two restaurants. They were side by side, the officers and their wives. Well, I look through the window and I see them all sitting around the table. And I'd go around and pick up a homely-looking Indian. I said, "You hungry?" "Yeah." "Well, let's go in the restaurant." I pick out a homely fellow, and a fellow with a butcher knife stuck on his belt, and his manners are not good. And I'd order a beefsteak, because the tableware wasn't sharp. And this Indian, he pulled out his own hunting knife, and he takes the meat, he bites in his mouth, and he cut off a big chunk to swallow. And by them officers and their wives couldn't help but see him. They get sick. And so one fellow, I pretended they were using Tabasco sauce over that meat. And I pretended I poured it like ketchup. And he said to me, "I know that stuff." He said, "That's good stuff to eat meat with." I said, "Yeah, take it lots, cover your meat up with it." And he took a bite after that, and he rolled it in his mouth, and he had to spit it out. It was strong stuff, this Tabasco sauce. He had to spit it out from the counter, and the ladies would see that, and they threw up. Or finally, they asked the Chinaman who was running the restaurant, and the Chinaman told me, he said, "Whenever the officers and their wives are eating," he said, "don't bring no one in." Well, they said, "Our dollar is good as theirs." Well, he said, "As long as the officers are eating," he said, I'll give you and your friend a free meal." And I took that. Then I went back to the post gymnasium to dance. I was sitting around. The ladies come up to me. They wanted to dance, and I said, "I thought you said I wasn't supposed to dance with you anymore." Well, they said, "We forgive you for that." Then I started dancing with the ladies again, but I made them, some of them sick from bringing in the homeliest woman or man that I could find on the street. I was pretty bold. When they told me I couldn't dance anymore with them, well, I said, I'll fix you ladies. And I fixed them that way.
Well, what did they think of you after that?
What's that?
What did they think of you after that?
Oh, they started dancing with me, and they wouldn't to dance with me after that. They said that I wasn't afraid of nothing. Yeah, I made them give in. They said to me at this first, you better not dance with us anymore. And I got even that way from the in the restaurant. While they're eating their Sunday meal, I went in there with the homeless looking fellas or woman that I could find. Fellas just acted in their custom with eating with the hunting knife attached to their belt.
When you were in town all that time, what different kind of businesses were there up there?
Oh, there was all kinds of business. Pool rooms and stores. There was restaurants, hotels.
What kind of work did the native people in Tananaw have that time?
Oh, they trapped and fished in the summer.
They worked for the fort, too? Did they work for the fort?
No, no natives that I know of. They might have worked. Some of them, I think, done odd jobs. Some natives. But I had free hands. I worked when I pleased. If it was bad weather or cold, I didn't work. And they didn't ask me to work, because when I worked, I saw plenty of wood with that steam saw. Every time we wanted to move the saw ahead a little ways, I went and got the horses. The stable was right close by.
When you were in Tananaw that time, did you ever go over to Hot Springs?
Oh, yes. I came through there twice. When I got out of jail, I came through with the horse team. They were carrying the mail. I was traveling with the mail carriers. When I got to Tananaw, I met a fellow there coming from Nenana to Nome. And He had one of the boys from the United bring him down to Canada, and there he was supposed to get another man to drive the dogs for him. And he got, I come along just in time. I come along from Canada to here with him, and he wanted me to go on to Nome with him, but I wouldn't go. Mrs. Devane needed me that time to work in the store. He said he'd get me, I'd have a steady job or something. He was a big mining man named Duncan.
What was Hot Springs like that time when you went through there?
Well, I seen, from what I seen of it that time, it was a nice little town. Where the town is now, on the NC side of the building. Is that building still up?
Yeah, that's still there.
Mm-hmm. But the cabins on the hillside was just like right here. It wasn't occupied, they quit mining then when I came through. And I've been there in the summer while rafting oil.
When were you rafting oil?
Oh, just after I was married. But I don't know exactly what year it was. I didn't raft very much. I had engine trouble all the time. I never got to Nenana but once. And I brought down a big, great big raft. This boat that I had was built for logging. It had a big winch over the engine. I could haul 1,000 drums down to the channel. There was only once. I started making another trip, but I never got to Nenana.
What happened?
So I had engine trouble. The water getting in the oil. And I didn't know enough about engines at the time to fix it.
So how'd you run that raft?
Shove it. Push it the raft behind the raft.
What was that raft made out of?
It was made by 2x4 was the frame. And they wired the drums inside of that.
So how many drums did you have?
I had 1,000.
They make 1,000?
I had 2 rafts, 500 each.
You push one in front of the other?
I had them lashed together. I had a 80 horsepower engine. I had enough power, but I was having trouble with the engine all the second trip.
So do you run onto any sandbars coming down?
We run on sandbars sometimes, but with me, I know where the bars is. I stayed clear in deep water all the time. I didn't have any trouble, but lots of fellas, white fellas and native boats, they get one drink too many and they don't know where they're going. Lots of rafts got stuck on the bar, and people had all kinds of oil who's living close by.
It's pretty lucky for them, huh?
Yeah.
So what do you get paid for rafting those barrels down?
$7 a drum from Nina down to Galena.
What's it cost to bring a drum down now?
I don't know, a whole lot more, I guess. I know that the people at Tano, they get their gas and oil, they pay a big price. Something like $75 a drum or more. $2 a gallon for gasoline. I never bought no gas or oil. I paid my board and everything in cash every month. With cash. Rent and all. Water, wood. I paid them $250 to $300. Gee, I forget that there's tape all the time.
That's the only way I could remember. So then anyway, you came back down here to Ruby in the 30s. Or you're down here in the 20s, but in the 30s, what were you doing after you got married and started having kids?
Well, I worked for myself most of the time. I was self-employed. I've been trapping, cutting wood in the summer, fishing. I didn't do no work for wages at all much since I got married. Boarding dogs. I had 120 dogs one summer right up here.
Where was your camp?
3 miles. I run a big fish camp in the summer. I sell all kinds of fish. I couldn't fill the orders. Like for Anchorage or Fairbanks, I had lots of orders for salmon strips, salmon bellies, sides, and dog feed that we could sell right here locally.
So how much you get for those things?
Well, we got cheap price compared to what they sell for now, right now. The dog feed, the most I ever got was 25 cents a pound. And they're about $1, $1.50 a pound for dry fish now. And strips is $8. We used to sell them for $1.25 a pound. They're paying $8-$9 a pound right now.
Do you have anybody helping you out in your fish camp?
Yeah, generally hire a native.
What kind of wages could a guy make in those days?
Well, they made pretty good wages. It was $5. The top wages.
$5 a day?
Yeah.
Working in fish camp, they could make that much?
Mm-hmm.
So, how is your wife? Is she a good fish cutter?
She said she was the number one fish cutter outside of Altona. You don't know her, do you?
Yeah, I met her.
She used to cut fish, but her fish fell to the ground mostly. Don't tell her that, though. She cuts fish so fast that she don't cut them. She cuts the skin, and that way the fish would sour and rot. I worked for Daigle off and on two, three summers. When he was running four fish wheels. I go early in the morning to the closer by wheels and bring that to the cutting table, and they get up by then. And I'd go to the other two wheels the furthest way, the furthest wheel away.
So how fast could Altona cut fish?
Oh, she cuts pretty fast. She cuts too damn fast. That's how she didn't cut. She spoiled a lot of fish. And my wife, she never was in a hurry. She cut real good. And I cut fish with her, and I cut pretty fairly. Not the best. Or I couldn't cut fish as fast as my wife could, or Altona. I cut them good. I cut slow.
How many fish an hour is slow?
Oh, I never did check. I cut over 50 anyway an hour.
Sounds pretty fast to me. So how about trapping those years?
Oh, the trapping was good and bad some years. Whenever the price is high, we made good money.
Where'd you go to usually?
I was trapping up there in Masanovi for 4 or 5 years, or 4 years. And then I went up to Slatina, toward the head of Novi. There I had all I can do. I had 12 lines.
How much fur could you catch up there at the head of the Novi?
I caught a lot of fur. More. I was outside another native named Frank Albert. He got just as many as I did. His sons helped him.
So those days, could you just go any place you wanted to trap?
No, we just had a regular trap line. But I covered the whole Salatina and all its tributaries. Took me 9 days to cover my trap line one way. And it's sure nice when you're getting lots of fur. When the pack gets heavy, but you don't mind it. Especially if the prices were high. We're happy all the time.
Well, if you had just certain trap lines, how was it that you could move from mouth of the Novi up to Salatina?
Move by the river is about 200 miles.
But I mean, you had to buy somebody's trap line, or how did you do that?
Yeah, I had to buy it from a white man named Joe Stobie. I paid him $200. He had just a short line up that river. And I covered the whole river. I trapped a little on the Kuskokwim side too. But the last couple of years, the lines were a little too long for me. I was getting all in. I had to cut down my part of my lines. 22 years I was up there, and that just played fell out pretty fast, going out every day.
Were there any other trappers around there then?
No, nothing. There was some at the head. These color boys were trapping up another river. They come over the head of Slatin down a little ways and back over to their country again. They never bothered me.
What would happen if somebody got on somebody else's trap line?
Well, they wouldn't like it so well, but there was no law against it. A fella could trap 3 foot, three feet alongside my trap. I can't say nothing. But we respected each other's trap lines. It was unwritten law.
People ever get into fights over that?
Oh, I guess some do. The white people. But I went so far up the Novi that I was trapping alone up there. I had this large country, covered the whole river. Yes, done few fellows ever made trouble for each other. They respected one another's top lines.
Did trappers used to work together on stuff?
Yeah.
How'd they do that?
Oh, work together, you say?
Yeah. Like freighting in their outfit and stuff like that.
Oh, we help other trappers, like taking our outfit up. We'd take his outfit up to where he's going, and along with our outfit. And for me, it's to get an outfit cost me $2,000. That's gas and everything. I didn't have enough left up there for next year in the grub line, but I built some good caches. Bear proof, wolverines, squirrels. They never bothered my stuff. I peeled all my cash posts and I built them high. And I built a house on top of each cash.
So how high up did you make it?
Oh, about 14 feet off the ground.
What size you make them? How big are they?
Oh, for cash, about 10 by 12 inside.
What kind of stuff did you bring up for your outfit?
We didn't get everything we want.
Well, what would that be?
Oh, them days they made cheese. For instance, they come in big wheels. Well, we get one or two of those wheels and that lasts us all winter. And potatoes, granulated potatoes, and everything that wouldn't hurt to freeze. We got powdered milk. Onions dehydrated. Peas and beans. Corn. They come in big bags. Eggs, dried eggs, very, very seldom we use store eggs, just fresh eggs. Only at the home camp, where we have a big cellar, we get a few fresh potatoes and eggs. Stuff that would freeze, keep good in the cellar. Right now, the grub that we paid $2,000 for it cost about $7,000 or $8,000.
So that $2,000 is just for grub.
What's this?
That $2,000, that's just for your grub.
Yeah. All the gas and oil for the lamps.
How about your clothes? What kind of clothes do you take with you?
Oh, we got all woolen clothes. heavy metal cut underwear and a heavy shirt or a good parka.
What's your parka made out of?
It's made out of pretty warm cloth, blue drill or khaki.
So how many dogs you run that time?
Oh, I had as high as 15, 17 dogs. I didn't use them all at one trip. And then after the trailers broke, I drive 9 or 10 dogs.
So what kind of things have happened to you when you're out there trapping?
What's happened?
Yeah.
What's this?
Well, you remember any stories about some time when you might have had some kind of tough time on the trail or something like that?
Oh, yes. We had lots of that. Rained. It rained quite a bit. It's closer to... to Anchorage, and we have rain when it snows in the Yukon. It rains a lot, and sometimes we break through the river. We get out of that, we get our sled and stuff all wet. It's a tough river to travel on, gravel bottom, and it opens up where you go one day, the next day, if it happens to be cloudy, the ice will thaw. We had to be on the alert all the time.
You ever have any problem with bears up there?
What?
Ever have any problem with bears up there?
Bears?
Yeah.
I never look one of the lucky fellows. I never had no trouble with bears. And other trappers, they had some trouble with bears. Brown bears, especially. I make a trap out of poles and spikes. I fix up one. And we at the home camp, I use barbed wire fencing. I covered over the windows. Many a bear has poked his head. I take out my windows every spring. I put them in the cache, and I nail it, the barbed wire, and then Mr. Bear comes, he sticks his head through that wire, they leave a lot of hair. Until a bear, he gets hurt sometimes pretty badly around the neck. He won't bother the barbed wire anymore.
Sounds like you had a pretty good camp up there.
Yeah. There's nothing right now. All my stoves and gas lamps, beds. They're all the spoils now. The cabins are down. I had 9 cabins. And there's 750 traps of all sizes.
So
that balloon comes into money right now. I got them while they were cheap. $1 for big wolf traps. $1 a piece. Right now they're worth about $10.
So when did you come in the spring?
What's that?
When you go out trapping, when you take your outfit up there?
Yeah, I take it up in the fall and I hunt my moose same time. Every fall I go up, I take all my dog feed and my grub. Like I said, we get everything dehydrated. We have to cook all our meals. There's nothing in to freeze, or even milk.
So do you come back to Ruby then for Christmas?
Sometimes. Sometimes I stay out there. My partner, whoever goes with me, he comes in. Sometimes I come in with him and sometimes I don't. Is it too far?
So what was your family doing while you were out there trapping?
They're going to school at Cochrane. I have to get 2 outfits. When I don't get an outfit for them, they can get anything they want in the store. Their credit was good. My credit was good in any stores because I always paid up. I remember once I was down here at Tom Devine's. He outfitted me most. I was about 7,000 in debt with Tom Devine alone. And I was sitting out in front on the bench, and he was in there typing some letters. He saw me sitting out there for a long time, and I was kind of worried. I didn't know what I would do that winter. And he finally came to the doorway, and he looked at me a while. He said, what are you going to do this winter, Bill? I said, I'm going trapping. I didn't want to give up. I said, I'll go trapping the hard way. I'll even line my boats up if I have to. With a considerable amount I owe you, I haven't the face to ask you for another outfit. He started a while, he said, you make out the list, everything, engines, everything you need. That's how good a credit I had. And I was expected down the NC store and Carbone's. I got all my outfits from him. I owed this much, $7,000. Was you going to give me an engine and gasoline and all that? I told him. He says, everything you need. Well, I told him I'll if I had engine and everything, I'd go up a long ways. That's the That time I was trapping up here at in the Martinovi. I cleaned out that country until I couldn't get two mink. Beaver was all trapped out. Mink and marten, fox, otter. Well, when he said I was going to go up, I bought this trap line off of this fellow, Joe, what's his name now? Was a German old fellow anyway. I paid just $200 for the trap line he had. I couldn't find all of it. I had to make my own trap lines. Like I said before, well, hard work didn't bother me none at all. I love to work.
So how did you pay off that debt you had?
I finally paid it all in 1 year with new outfit and all. I even made, we didn't have very many taps. We had 250 taps, and the kid that went up with me, he's living right now, he's around Fairbanks. His name is Merle Marie.
Merle and Marie?
Merle.
Merle.
Mm-hmm.
What's his last name, McCarty?
Marie.
Oh, Marie.
His father's name was Tom Marie, and that was his father. He was a kid of about 17 years old, 16, but he could do anything out on the trapline. If his sleigh broke down on the trail, he'd say, stop right there and fix it. He'd break a snowshoe or something, he'd tie it up that night. He can't read, he doesn't know how to read. He never went to school. His father kept him working down here at the Yukiksaget, where they had a home. He learned everything from his father, how to tan moose skins and fix snowshoes if it breaks. If a sleigh breaks down, he'd stay right there and fix it. He'd get a natural crooked bush, and he'd hew one side of it and fasten that on some way to the stanchion, and he'd make it to the next cap. That's about that boy never got stuck.
Is he a native guy?
Hmm?
He was a native guy or a white guy?
Yeah, native. And I never had a written agreement with nobody yet. I had a dozen or more boys going with me. I tell them how I'll pay them. And I furnish the grub and dogs, dog feed. I furnish everything. And they're more than glad to go with me, them boys. They even fought once. There was Robert, Bob, and Nelson McQuestion. And ordered them two fought to go with me, because I paid them one third of all the catch, everything we catch, and I furnish all the grub and dog team and everything else. It didn't cost them nothing, just the tobacco I wouldn't buy. They were more than glad to go with me. And I never had a written agreement with none of them, but I just paid them off as I had said. A verbal agreement, that's all. I have had my son-in-law, Donald Honey. He went with me 1 year. Or 2 years, I think. And the other son-in-law, Bill Catton, he went with me 1 year, but that's the last year I was up there. If I hadn't gone blind in 55 or 56. He'd still be with me, and he'd clean the country out. He was always talking about, let's clean up. One fall, this fall, he went up with me. He showed the marten tracks. First, his eyes bulged out. He said, how many marten we going to catch? Well, I said, it all depends on how busy we'll get. Maybe 1,000. Gee whiz, I can't believe it. Well, he believed it that winter when he got a big pile of furs. I sent him in to, right here it was. He come in, he was married to my daughter, Eleanor. Me, I stayed out there till later. $390 Martin is the best I could catch. I could do better some winters if I could get up to the head right soon enough. But the river was so swift that it didn't freeze up, and there's canyons up there. I couldn't go around them. I had to wait till freeze up or build bridges out of trees and poles, cross over on top on these bridges. It'd be way after Christmas when we get up to the real mountain country. The head forks.
So that winter when you and Billy Captain went out, you got 390 that time?
No, we got 290 or 280 since that time. We had difficulty getting up to the mountain country. And I cut the line shorter. I couldn't go as far as I used to. He was willing to go around them lines, but I have two lines from each cabin on the side lines, and one straight through on the trail. Well, if I didn't cut him off, he'd have to go over the two lines, and that made me lose a day. He was young and fresh, and me, I was getting tired out.
So what year was it that you got the most?
Oh, that was in the first 3-4 years.
I'll get that thing.
Oh, thank you. Fur prices was way high this time. I paid up Tom Duane for the fresh outfit and the old bill, $7,000. And we had money left for all summer. Merle, he had so much money, he come to Cochrane, he bought suit of clothes for all the boys and girls, Mars organs. He's buying everything in big lots.
Sounds like you guys had a good party when you came back in.
Yeah.
So when would you come in the spring?
In April. After the beaver season gets through. I'd come in at Christmas or 17th of March, and then I'd plan what we'd do when I come in April. I was the chief up there, head of council. More years than I can remember.
So what was 17th of March like?
Well, it was same as Christmas, dancing and potlatching, dog races. Races for everybody. Once I came in, it was in March. Everybody was out trapping beaver. We got in the poker game at Cochrane's. Five of us with one woman. That woman is alive yet. She's up at Fairbanks with her mother, Lena. And
what was that woman's name?
I have to think while I know the real world, but anyway, her name was Mrs. Nikolai. Her husband drowned right here couple of years ago. What's her name anyway? Gladys. And she's taking care of her stepmother. That's not her real mother, but her stepmother. She's about 90 years old, and she has to be with her all the time. They're living at the Kers... No, not Kers, no. Some apartments at Fairbanks. Birch Park.
Uh-huh. So you guys got in a poker game?
Oh, yeah. We got in a poker game, and there happened to be two of the councilmen was playing cards with us. They asked me what we're going to have here in April. And right then I said, well, if you want, I'll send a message to Thunder Topic before I leave, saying, notifying everybody what kind of times we're going to have. I sent that way everybody would hear that. Out trapping, they would hear it. And I also said in that message, I use part native for meat. I remember well the time that it was.